All right, welcome back to Ball Don't Lie right here on 104.9 The Horn. It is a Yacht Rock Thursday edition of Ball Don't Lie. You can always be a part of the show. Please do hit us up. Spec text line is the best way to do it, 512-337-3776. You also can hit us up via Twitter. I'm at Rod Babers in the Twitterverse. My man Harge is at Hardball Harge in the Twitterverse. Patrick Davis at It's Patrick Davis in the Twitterverse. We got some Sark sound we'll get to from his media availability earlier today. We also will get to Athlon Sports ranking every starting quarterback in college football. I want to get to that, too. So we'll probably start with that and work our way to the Sark sound. Also, Cedric Baxter committing to Texas gives them their 22nd commitment in the 2023 class. And I believe now in many of the recruiting publications or many of the recruiting outlets have Texas now as a top three recruiting class for 2023. So we'll get to those here coming up here in just a second. Harge, just to start out, I want to get to the quarterback, Athlon Sports ranking of the quarterbacks first, and then we'll get to the Sark sound. So I went and looked at the entire list. They ranked 131 of the quarterbacks, and they're projecting. So if you disagree with the quarterback that they predicted, then that's just, you know, agree to disagree. Some of them they had and or with a quarterback. But they had Texas, just so we won't bury the lead. They did have Texas Quinn Ewers as the starting quarterback projected. He has not won that job. That is just what Athlon Sports believes. Harge believes that Hudson Carr is going to win the job.
I do. I still believe that he's got a fighter's chance to go in there and figure out a way to take that job. And he's got the most experience. There's no doubt about that. Taking the fact that Quinn Ewers hadn't played in a year and a half, almost two seasons.
It's been a while.
Yeah, it's been yeah. So we'll see what happens. But, you know, I thought Casey Thompson was winning the job last year too.
That was my prediction as well. I thought he was just more, like I said, when you choose a quarterback, it's like choosing a significant other. The woman you marry is not the always the hottest woman you ever dated. She's the one that's most compatible with you. And I think Casey last season was more compatible with the offense just because of the deficiencies, because you needed a quarterback that could improvise when the play broke down and you were going to be operating off schedule a ton. And I think Casey was just better in terms of the operating system when he had to improvise and when the play broke down. And I think that actually ended up coming to fruition last season. But from what I'm hearing, Hudson Card is much better now. He is much better, and he is coachable, but not as much of a robot as he was last season. All right, let's get to the rankings here. So we'll start from the bottom, work our way up. Quinn Ewers is at 29. They have on this list. So they got him ranked the 29th best quarterback in the FBS. ULM's quarterback, they have Chandler Rogers, and they have him at 114th. So do your research on Chandler Rogers. He's actually in bad. He's a bit of a dual threat, rushed for over 300-some yards, but we'll get to that when we do our prep for Louisiana Monroe.
Yep.
Also, Jalen Daniels, the Kansas quarterback. Oh, sorry, take that back. Hunter Deckers, Iowa State quarterback, is the next quarterback, opposing quarterback Texas will face that's on this list. He's 89th. Iowa State. Remember, Iowa State losing Brock Purdy. Brock Purdy had been there for a while. They got Jalen Daniels of Kansas at 88. Then Tyler Shuck of Texas Tech at 64th. Baylor, Blake Shapen at 63rd. I think that's probably too low for Blake Shapen, but they don't know much about him other than last year. He played in those three games, but also ended up helping win the Big 12 title for Baylor. And in the offseason, usurped Gary Bohannon and ended up taking that job. A guy who the coach loved so much, he had pictures of him in his house with his kids, but still was able to give that job to Blake Shapen. So I got a lot of faith in Blake Shapen, and that offensive line for Baylor is going to make him look really good. Aggie, shout out to you guys just really quick. That's not obviously an opponent of Texas. Max Johnson, they have him at 46th, and they have him winning a job because that's also not final for the Aggies. That is a quarterback competition ongoing.
Mm-hmm.
They have TCU's quarterback, Max Duggan, at 45.
I was going to say, that's not your guy.
I don't think Max Duggan's going to win that job.
Right, right.
Yeah,
I remember you saying that.
I don't think. I think with that Lincoln, it's not Lincoln Riley, but Lincoln Riley's little brother, Garrett Riley.
Garrett Riley.
Running that air raid offense. I think they want someone who's going to throw the football, and that's not really Max Duggan. I think they'll have a better option. Adrian Martinez, he's at 38 for K-State. So basically, he's our top 40 quarterbacks based on the evaluation of Athlon Sports. They have K-State, Adrian Martinez at 38. Harge, I'll give you a ton of credit because you've been saying he's a sleeper for a while, and I watched film on him, and I do like Frank Harris at UTSA. They got him at 32nd.
Yeah.
He's the 32nd best quarterback in the FBS.
He's sneaky, man.
Yeah.
He's sneaky about it.
And UTSA's got a good wide receiving
core. They had a good backfield since Sam McCormick, who ended up not getting drafted, which was kind of crazy to me, but he was somebody that could change the field, change direction, and Frank Harris, he can run around, he can throw on the run. He can get you those extra yards. He's an impact type of quarterback where he'll think about it real quick and make that decision.
Yep.
But he will dime you up. So, yeah.
They said UTSA, I've read several publications, Bleacher Report on three, says UTSA has the best wide receiving core or receiving core conference, USA.
See? There you go. They're right there in the mix.
Yeah, right,
so that's why I keep saying, you know, Texas's schedule may look a certain way to everybody on the surface. But game two and game three is something that you definitely need to pay attention to. But
I've been saying it for a while. Sark should, in offseason, he should have been preparing for UTSA, not Bama, because he can lose to Bama, and nobody expects him to beat Bama. If he does, that's amazing, but nobody expects it to happen. Bama's going to be really good, and even if he gets blown out by Bama, nobody's going to hold that against Sark. If that UTSA game ends up being an upset or even comes to a point where it's way too close for comfort, that could come back to haunt Sark.
For sure.
Because that's too close to home.
For sure.
So if I was him in the offseason, hey, to hell with preparing for Bama. We're going to wait. We're preparing for Bama when it's time. We're preparing for UTSA. We got to beat UTSA. They can't have anything crazy happen there. But Frank Harris is 32nd ranked quarterback based on this evaluation. They have Texas, like I said, Quinn Ewers at 29. West Virginia, JT Daniels in that Graham Harrell offense. They got 28th best quarterback based on their rankings. Oklahoma with Dylan Gabriel. You've been calling your shot that you love Dylan Gabriel, especially now going back to that Jeff Lebby offense that he was in as a freshman there at UCF. They got him as the 19th best quarterback in the country, so they got him as a top 20 quarterback.
8,000 yards passing in his career.
Yeah.
Just don't get it twisted.
Yeah, no, you're right about that.
70 touchdowns.
Spencer Sanders, which has been projected as to be the best quarterback in the Big 12, he is projected to be 18th best quarterback in college football. And then Bryce Young, defending Heisman Trophy winner Texas will face. He is number one, best quarterback in college football. They got C.J. Stroud at number two.
C.J. Stroud at number two.
Just real quick, a couple of other names. Casey Thompson, they had at 51 for Nebraska. Cade Klubnik was mentioned as a slash with DJU.
Uh-huh.
And they had it at 59. So there you go. And Clayton Toon, who we talked about yesterday at U of H, he's at number 20 for U of H. And Cameron Rising, 15th best quarterback in the country based on Athlon Sports' evaluation for Utah. Spencer Rattler, they got 14, going to South Carolina. And Sam Hartman, who is unfortunately dealing with a non-football injury that's going to have him out for a while.
They hope to have him back this season.
Okay.
They just don't know when this season.
And they have not revealed,
they haven't said what,
second,
it was.
What exactly
no,
it is.
So I haven't seen it because I've been looking for it.
He's one of my favorite players to watch, too. I mean, he was really fun to watch in that offense. They used to do – he would do what they call a quarterback, a booty block.
Yep.
And it was so strange. The way they would run their run plays or run their option plays or even their RPOs, he would – basically, they would situate the quarterback – so that after he either handed off the ball, that he could booty block the backside defensive end or defender. It was freaky and crazy. I had never seen a booty block, didn't even know it was a thing. And now booty block is a terminology that is about how quarterbacks, I don't know, maybe you can do it with other positions, but quarterbacks, how they would block backside defenders after they're handing off the football.
Yeah.
Wild stuff, man. So we're wishing that young man the very best. But they got him at number six, and they got Caleb Williams, who was at Oklahoma, but now at USC with Lincoln Riley at number three on that list.
Impactful. Very impactful. He was the number one impactful transfer that was also on their list yesterday when I did the Athlon top impact quarterback across the nation.
Got Texas facing six top 40 quarterbacks based on this ranking. So that's more elite quarterback play than I would assume Texas would be playing. But we'll get into that. But speaking of quarterbacks, let's talk about Texas quarterbacks. Here's Sark on what he's looking for in the quarterbacks at the scrimmage specifically.
Execution, decision making, accuracy, leadership, body language. understanding the special situations that arise in the scrimmage, third downs, red area, two-minute drills. You know, there's going to be a lot of different scenarios that come up, and how they manage those situations as they show themselves in the scrimmage, as opposed to in practice when we're going to do a drill. Red area, and we're in the red area. When you're playing football, it could be a 3rd and 9 situation, which you got to tap into. You convert it, now all of a sudden you're in the red zone. And so your brain has to shift to what is the situation that we're in. So that a lot for the quarterbacks that way, but that's overall for a team. You know, we're really trying to understand the situations that make up the game. The quarterbacks are the ones at the forefront of all that, of understanding that and operating at a high level when those situations come up.
There you go, Harch. He's looking for a lot of different things from his quarterbacks in the scrimmage coming up. But remember, Sark said he's got a good idea who the quarterback is, and it's not going to take as long as it did last year. And those are two things he said.
And I think he's leading us to that conversation of Quinn Ewers. The way that he's been presenting a lot of this, the mm-hmm. answers and what he's been saying to the media. You know, if you can listen to it and lead, he's been trying to give both quarterbacks the little fluff, but you can tell with the excitement on some of the things. And one of the things that he talks about is making sure that you hit the quarterback wide receivers in the right number.
Ball placement.
And the ball placement of it. And I get it. I saw it today. I got a chance to go watch a team play, and if you didn't put the ball in the right spot, it made it a little bit tougher for them. They had to slow down, and those are the things. Mm-hmm. I mean, you got to make sure you're leading people in the right direction. And I've seen the way Quinn throws the ball. I've seen the way Hudson throws the ball. I just want to make sure that is it going to be the exact same type of fair play type of situation where everybody gets enough reps to with the first team, with the second team, to see what kind of goes down. So it's kind of funny to hear it now. But he did warn us. He did warn us. He said, I'm not waiting as long as I did last year. So that's the cool part about it.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I think that he should have a better idea now, because he's actually now has time to acclimate himself to the campus, to the roster. He knows the players a lot more, and he's able to spend more time in the offseason with the players. Remember, they changed the NCAA rules, so now he's able to provide, I think it's instructional time, 2 hours per week with the players. More time with the players, I think, gives you a more accurate evaluation mm-hmm. of those guys as well. Okay, let's get to another piece of sound here. I love this question from my man Jeff Hives. Great question. Talks about basically asking Sark about how did you go about trying to improve the football IQ, something you've talked about, you've been concerned about it, you've been critical of the team about their low football IQ. What did you do specifically this offseason to make sure that you upgrade the football IQ? Here is Sark.
Well, we're designating actual meetings to football IQ meetings right now in camp, and we're really trying to teach situations as they arise, as they show themselves to us, whether it's sudden change, whether it's potential, you know, 4-down territory, meaning it's 3rd down, but they're in an area of the field. Even if they don't convert it, they could go for it on 4th down, and that could affect play calling on both sides to 2 minute at the end of the half, 2 minute at the end of the game, red area, short yardage, tempo plays, and what teams are trying to do. So we're dedicating meetings to that as a team. And we're trying to provoke conversation about it. And so that guys are – and then who is applying it in practice, and then who is applying it in scrimmage when those things arise? Who are the guys that are communicating those things? And then who are the guys that are totally oblivious to what's going on around them? That's important. And so, like I said, that's what Saturday is for in the scrimmage. You know, there's a lot of evaluation that is going to take place, and a lot of notes will be written. A lot of constructive criticism will be made, and that's good. That's healthy. And then who can improve on those things as we keep moving forward?
I like that. And I don't know if it's going to work. No idea if it's going to work at all. I'm not saying it's going to work, but I'm glad that he had a plan to address this. One thing, and I always say this is my strategy on the show, why I do so much damn research. You know, it's one thing to complain about something, an observation, and be critical of it. And it's one thing to try to come up with a solution for it. and be solutions oriented. So most of my takes are about, no, do this instead. Do, go this route. They should be doing this rather than just complaining about the obvious. And so I'm glad Sark is solutions oriented. So I would say coaches are problem solvers. Mm-hmm. Solve the problem. What's the problem? Low football IQ. How do you improve it? Well, these guys got to be better situationally. Well, all right. That means they need to know the situation.
Right.
They need to know their responsibility within the coverage, the down, the distance, the formation, the personnel, all those things. What I say, make you a football investigator. And there are clues being dropped pre-snap that I think all of Texas defenders last year were just missing. They were walking right by those damn clues. They didn't see any of them. And then they went out there and basically they were going cold turkey. Nobody plays football like that. At least great football players don't.
Right.
You narrow down the possibilities and the ways that a team can exploit you based on all those little clues: down, distance, formation, personnel package, the film study that you've done, their strengths, their weaknesses, their tendencies.
Ding, ding, ding.
Right?
That's the
how
answer
they exploit
right
you.
There.
All that stuff. All those things play a huge role in that. And and I don't think any of these guys are picking up any of those clues, Arch.
And that's the thing. You said it right there. When you start looking at the simple fact of, what am I doing to get myself better every single day? You talk about it all the time because you do it all the time. You go and watch film. You look at tendencies. You try to figure out. You try, like the investigator that you're talking about. You go in and you look at down and distance and you say, all right, I'm going to eliminate four of these plays in my mindset. And if you don't have that ready, that means you haven't prepared yourself personally, whether it's you going to a meeting by yourself, you calling in the defensive coordinator or offensive coordinator and saying, hey, I'm looking at this situation right here. A lot of this stuff is self-taught, too. You have to want to go and teach yourself these types of things. If you're waiting on a coach to bring you in to go watch film, that's on you. You need to make sure that you're watching certain things yourself, because if you got a singular focus and saying, I'm going up against Roy Williams this week and I'm the cornerback, I'm looking at every single thing. I watched an interview with Deion Sanders. He was talking to one of his young cornerbacks and he was saying, you got to breathe, sleep, and eat this, because that guy across from you is trying to take food off your plate. So if you are playing cornerback and you're going up against this guy, you got to know every single thing about him. If he's got his foot turned a certain way. Kenny Sims used to tell me all the time when he would get up to the line, if he saw that their knuckles were white, that means that they're going to do a running play. And if they were light and you could see the red in their knuckles, I knew that it was going to be a pass play. So I knew exactly what I could do to get off the line of scrimmage. And those are the types of things that these young players have to take pride in of knowing.
Yeah. Speaking of line play, Sark was asked about the shift from playing in the interior offensive line and then transitioning to the perimeter of the offensive line at tackle, and talked about how his focus mainly is about getting the best five guys on the field on the offensive line, not necessarily about specific position rigidity. Here is Steve Sarkisian.
Well, I think the biggest and the best way we try to talk to the guys about it is we want to play the best five players up front. The last thing I would want to do is have five guys starting, but my third best lineman isn't on the field because he's a backup tackle, right? But he would be our starting guard if he played guard. So we just try to explain it really well. I think one of the classic guys right now is DJ Campbell. You know, he's playing guard for us, and he's going to be a heck of a player. And that's not saying before his career's done at Texas that he's not going to end up being a tackle, but for an opportunity for him early to potentially get himself on the field, guard may be a better spot. And to go back to the last place we're at, Alex Leatherwood started as a true freshman as a guard. Evan Neal started as a true freshman as a guard. But when they left that school and got drafted in the NFL in the first round, they got drafted as tackles. And so it's about trying to put your best five out there that work really well together, that give us the best chance to be successful.
Yeah, I like that, because I think it manufactures depth when you have a guy, not that he can be, you know, an elite player at both positions, but you have a guy that can play at a serviceable level, at a competent level at guard or at tackle, but then at the other position, that's his you know, primary position, and he can play at an all conference level, or he can be your best or your top two tackles on the team. I think I would like to have multiple guys within your starting rotation that can end up being, you know, a switch player, a player that can end up playing tackle or guard for you. And I think that's what they want from Junior Ungalau. They have Junior Ungalau right now working backup center.
Right. A lot of center.
A lot of center. And they need it. You need a contingency plan just in case something happens with Jake Majors. You would hate to be SOL just because you didn't anticipate losing your starting center.
Yeah. And we've talked about the line of scrimmage and what is needed and what they're bringing in and the recruiting classes that they've had the last two seasons and how important it is. They're getting bigger, quicker, athletic guys. That's the biggest thing. When he talked about Leatherwood from Alabama, if you go back and you just look at how massive of a human being that he is and how he's progressed throughout this time, and a lot of that was Kyle Flood. Kyle Flood has to go out there and be able to teach these guys on the offensive line about moving and technique and being able to accept whatever pressure is going to be thrown their way. So I hear it. I hear he's saying all the right things, and I'm looking at it and saying, all right, once we get on the field, and like you said, we'll learn a lot more after they scrimmage on Saturday, and I believe that's when they start to – you start to hear the rumblings of who showed up, young or old, and then you start looking at, okay, how is he going to start putting the depth chart together as the season gets ready to come upon us?
Yeah. No, it'll be a much drastic separation after the scrimmages start, and obviously we'll be keeping up with it. All right, we come back. We're talking more Texas football on the other side. We'll hear from Sark, but also we're talking about the defense, or at least I'm talking about the defense and Rod's round of the day. I got some troubling numbers, and we'll talk about how Texas is going to solve their problem with third and long. All of that and more right here on Ball Don't Lie on 104.9 The Horn.
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
Find out what happens when people stop being polite
and start getting real.
You ain't keeping it real.
My God, okay, it's happening. Everybody stay calm.
You've got it now. It's time for Rod's Rant of the Day.
Hold on to your butts.
All right, welcome back to Ball Don't Lie right here on 104.9 The Horn. Time for Rod's Rant of the Day. And I want to talk about third and long for Texas, which last year, you know, third down defense period for last year was a struggle. But third and long specifically for Texas really was disappointing. It's hard to get a ranking of third and long, but Texas third down defense, they were 107th in the country. Allowed teams to convert a little over 42% of their third down conversions against Texas. Yeah, so that's not obviously great. You know where that ranks, 107. That's really bad. But third and long is what I look at. Third and long is defined. Some people have different definitions. I define as third and 7+. And the reason, because it's basically third and long is one of the only situations in football where the odds actually flip in favor of the defense if you start looking at all the probabilities. If you look at third and five, this is in the FBS in 2021, right? So you look at yards to go, third and blank yards to go, and then look at the average yards per play that teams were able to gain. It's around third and six where the odds start to flip for the defense. So third and one in 2021 in college football, third and 1 yard to go, teams average 4.2 yards per play. Money. Third and two, teams average 5.2 yards per play. Money. Third and three, teams average 5.3 yards per play. Third and four, teams in college football last year averaged 5.2 yards per play. They were killing them. Third and five, 5.4 yards per play. Third and six, teams average 5.8 yards per play. They're right there. And third and seven, teams are averaging 5.8 yards per play. That's when it flips.
Mm.
That's when it flips usually because their yards per play is significantly less than the yards to gain. And the negative play percentage finally rises to double digits. Talking about this is nationally last year, 10.1% right at third and six. So that means the chances of the defense forcing a negative play, they rise exponentially. And you look at the pass percentage, third and one pass percentage, 12%. Third and two, pass percentage, 28%. Third and three, yards to go, pass percentage is 50%. Third and four, yards to go, pass percentage, 64%. Third and five, 69%. You're right there. And then third and six, it's a 73% pass rate. So you pretty much know a predictable passing situation. Third and seven, almost 80% predictable passing situation. That's why third and seven, that's when it flips. That's you should, as a defensive coordinator, you should get ready to win. All the players on the field should be ready to win on third and long, because that's when the odds flip in your favor. For Texas last year, I did, like I said, I wish I had national numbers for third and long. They're really, really tough to find. But for Texas third and long last year, they allowed opponents, they're in seven plus, right? They allowed opponents to convert 33% of their third and longs last year. So seven plus yards to go. Remember the six-game losing streak? Part of the reason the six-game losing streak got to six games is because their third and long defense were allowing teams to convert 40% of their third and longs, third and seven plus. That is a really bad. Hell, Texas allowed teams to convert 42% of third downs overall throughout the season. Yep. So imagine a team in third and long, and they got a 40% chance to convert that. That number should be really, really low. It should be 20% or even lower than that. So that was the huge problem with Texas last year. And now Witten started looking at the, you know, third and kind of breaking down third and seven plus and third and long. And just the passing via the pass for Texas. So third and seven plus yards to gain. Texas allowed teams to have a 67% completion percentage on third and seven plus yards to gain. Doesn't always mean that they converted. All right, doesn't mean they converted. They converted around 30% of those pass plays of third and long. Right around there, close to 29%. But I went and looked at third and 10 plus yards to go. This comes from Sports Source Analytics. So third and double digits, you got a huge favor, if you will, a huge win probability, if you will, for the defense. All right, Texas allowed opponents to complete 81% of their third and 10 plus yards to go when they were passing. These are just passing numbers. I don't know who would run it on third 10 plus yards to go. But
third, like, you know, whatever you got to exactly. do.
Teams had an 81% completion percentage, and they converted, this is only via the pass right now, I'm talking about the pass, 7 of 17. That's too many.
I was going to say, man.
Yeah.
I'm like, wait,
like you
what?
Think it. No, yeah. That's too many. That's way, you're talking about 41% of the, when teams were in third and double digit yards to gain against Texas, and they decided to throw the ball, which they did, teams converted 41% and had an 81% completion percentage.
Man.
Got to fix that. And pressure's part of it, too. We know they did not apply a lot of pressure last year, and when you get to third and long, Harge, that's when the quarterback, obviously, the drop backs get a little bit deeper.
Yeah, and right? That's when you should be salivating yards. As a defense.
You should, exactly. You should, because it's a predictable passing situation.
Yes.
You know you don't have to worry about the run.
Yes.
You know, you can pin your ears back and just go after those guys. And in that situation, when Texas knew the team was throwing the ball and the odds were in their favor, they still couldn't win consistently. Texas was 108th in the FBS in pressure rate, last in the Big 12. They were 9th in the Big 12 in pressure rate on blitzes, 111th nationally, and 9th in the Big 12 in opponent adjusted pressure rate. And that's why Sark is deciding, it's a smart move by Sark, saying I'm trying to psychoanalyze Sark here, but I believe Sark is deciding, I am going to invest and promote coverage because I can't depend on my pass rush improving. Maybe the development in the offseason by the coaches, you know, maybe they take a huge exponential leap forward, that would be great, but for him as a coach to count on that would be foolhardy. Considering what I said, that's why you've seen so many changes on the back seven, right? You've seen Anthony Cook go to safety, Keaton Crawford go to safety. You've seen Ryan Watts come in, starting corner already, coming through transfer portal hard. Is predicting a big year for him.
Yes.
Jadae Barron now going to be starting nickel back there. Jalen Ford is going to be starting at the linebacker. Your back seven looks drastically different than it did last year because he wants to promote coverage. And all those guys, I said the coverage will improve, not only because it has to, where else can it go but up? I mean, Texas last year allowed teams to complete over 61% of passes of 15 yards or more down the field, over 58% of passes of 20 yards or more down the field. Mm. So it's going to improve, but I think prioritizing coverage in the old debate, right, the chicken or the egg of football, which is it pressure or is it coverage? which one makes a good defense? Because you can't have both. I mean, hell, the Rams actually have a little bit of both. It's really tough to have both. Most teams, that's a luxury most teams cannot afford. So if you have to choose, which one do you choose? And Sark is making the choice to choose coverage because he believes with those new faces on campus that he can have success, a successful blueprint by forcing the quarterback to hold the ball a little bit longer, and getting more coverage sacks or coverage pressures and affecting the quarterback that way. He hasn't been able to change the personnel on the defensive line as much. You still pretty much got the same guys coming back. Hopefully they got better. Hopefully they thrive in the system because it's the same system coming back, same terminology, same coaching, all of that. Hopefully all of that works. But the Kim Kardashian, Nicki Minaj, Serena Williams size, Cardi B size, Lizzo size but here is it's just the same guys.
Yeah.
But the back seven, very different. And I think that's because they looked at the same numbers that I'm looking at and going, there's no way we can survive in a league like the Big 12 where if it's third and 10 plus yards to go, that teams are completing 81% of their passes and converting 40 plus percent of those. Can't have that. Can't have teams being a third and 7 plus. You can't have teams converting 40% of their third and longs against you.
So let me ask
and
you.
And it's not pressure you can depend on. Sorry.
Yeah. So let me ask you this. So when we had the conversation and PK tried to make the joke, what pressure, right? Isn't that something that you should accept as a challenge as a team when you know that the difference is, as you said, you can't have both, but in those predictable situations, why is it so hard to create pressure? That's the part that I have a hard time with because you have the athletes.
That's why they're moving Marvin Overshown.
Yeah,
that's why they're moving Overshown to the edge a little bit more. Just like you said, that you know they need to force the pressure somehow. If you can't get it organically, and Texas cannot get it organically, you can platoon your defensive line more specifically. So find the best pass rushers and make a NASCAR package that you can put in there on those predictable passing situations. You can also more twists and stunts up front. I don't think we saw enough twists and stunts up front from those guys, especially in third and long situations. I think the defensive linemen are head up too much. In PK's system, I would have them, you know, in the gaps. I would have them actually already lined up in the gaps at times. I heard Roy Miller talk about that. He thinks they're head up too much. I'd also blitz more. I don't think Texas blitzes enough. I'd blitz more, and that's part of having Overshown out there. I'd blitz him more. And I think, you know, those are all things they can do schematically to try to help them. But up front, they still pretty much are bringing back the same guys. And in the back seven, they're changing personnel and in the hopes of promoting coverage, getting better at coverage overall, and then force the quarterback to hold the ball, and that will increase the pressure you're putting on the quarterback. Now, it may increase on its own if you have Alfred Collins become a war daddy in the offseason, or you know Vernon Broughton, or you know Byron Murphy asserts himself and imposes his will. We don't even know about that. Those are factors we cannot account for right now. I'm just going off the data and the film that I've watched and my suggestions of what they should do. But I do like the DeMarvion Overshown move. I like putting him as an edge defender at times, especially in passing situations, third and long, just like I brought up.
Yeah.
All right. A lot of data there, but I want to give you that. Not trying to reflect on the bad, but just telling you the third. If I'm prioritizing what Texas needs to fix, I mean, your third and long defense has got to be at the top of that list.
For sure.
Very top of that list.
Yeah.
Nothing more deflating than, we got third and long. Odds flip in favor of us.
First and 10.
There you go.
First and 10.
All right, we come back. We'll get into Kyrie Irving, apparently. There's some contract demands that were leaked out. Ben Simmons left a team group chat that was reported to. And our favorite audio drop from Hard Knocks. We already got one. I guarantee you it'll bring a smile to your face. All that and more right here on Ball Don't Lie on 104.9 The Horn. All right, welcome back to Ball Don't Lie right here on 104.9 The Horn. We got the all name team from college football that's out. So we'll get to that and have some fun with that here in a second. But let's get to this Kyrie Irving story here, Harge, because you sent this, and apparently this comes from Rick Bucher, actually, because Rick Bucher was on a show when he revealed what he knows as the details of some of the details of Kyrie Irving's contract. He was on the On the Ball podcast, and he revealed, here's what he said. He said, quote, Nets governor, Joe Tsai has already shown he's willing to play hardball with Kyrie by taking a mass extension off the table almost immediately. Now, part of that may be Kyrie's doing. I'm told he wanted his new contract to guarantee he wouldn't have to play more than 60 games in a season and would not have to play any back-to-backs, which he apparently referred to as inhumane.
Inhumane.
Wow. That's a nice little nugget there.
Come on, man. What's inhumane?
Back-to-backs are. That's what's inhumane, damn it.
It's inhumane to pay you an ungodly amount of money to play a sport. Inhumane.
I would say, yeah, the usage is probably wrong.
That's the
probably
word
awful.
Is very probably, wrong.
The word choice is
if
awful.
You want to try and be an activist and enlightened and everything, I wouldn't use inhumane to describe something you're getting paid millions of dollars to do.
Fair.
Just me.
Agreed.
Just me on that one.
No, just me.
I agree.
I can say, hey, man, this doesn't make sense. It's really bad. Like I've talked to doctors and doing it back to back. I'm not able to get the rest, and it's really hurting me down the stretch when I do back to backs. If you want to have that, that's fine. But yeah, don't come out and be like it's like all the suffering. It's almost like the Holocaust every time I play a back to back.
Yeah.
No, definitely wrong word choice. Yeah, wrong word choice. Should have went somewhere else. Harsh, your thoughts on Kyler Murray potentially having in his contract that he would play no back to backs. And not play more than 60
Kyrie
games.
Kyrie Irving.
What'd I say?
Kyler Murray.
Oh, sorry, Kyrie Irving.
All the contract talk.
I don't know why I went there.
I apologize.
My brain went there. Sorry, I apologize.
You know how I feel about Kyrie, man. He is a very, very talented basketball player. But his controversy is taking away from the way that he has played his career. Like, he's a talent, but every year we're dealing with him coming up with these insane theories that people continue to look at him and say, why are we paying you all this money? Like, they expected a lot. That is why our man Kevin Durant is truly losing it right now, because he hitched his wagon to someone that he thought had the same mindset of him, and that is, I just want to hoop. I just want to ball. And now he's got this. He's got a guy that didn't want to do certain things. His reasoning is all about him. That's cool. You don't have to take the shot. You don't have to do some of the things that others have done on your team. I get it. But now you're putting your team in jeopardy of having success. So if that's how you want to be, then just step away from the game and not be part of the controversy all the time.
Oh, I'm pretty sure he wants some money, though. I'm pretty sure he wants to make millions of dollars.
He definitely wants to make
millions. He wants that.
Come on now.
So he can't step away because he wants all that. But he does not want to play to earn it.
Definitely not in back-to-backs. Not in back-to-backs. Someone says double headers are inhumane.
Seven innings. They make them seven innings.
That's true. That's true. Good point there. Maybe counterproductive or something would have been a better word for Kyrie there. Okay, Ben Simmons. This was actually something that was on BS. So I got it from Black Sports Online, but also Total Pro Sports had it up there too. So apparently the latest rumor, I'm going to say it's a rumor. All right.
For rumor.
Yeah. That Ben Simmons reportedly did not like when his Brooklyn Nets teammates asked him if he planned on playing during the team's first round exit against the Boston Celtics. It was basically the report here says they're having, this is what Rick Bucher, once again, Rick Bucher, he's all over the place. He said they're having a team chat before game four, thinking he's going to play against the Celtics. And from what I'm told, Ben just left the chat. That's what he said on Colin Cowherd's show. He said they asked him, are you going to play? Ben left the chat. Like, he didn't even answer the question. Just left the chat. He just left the entire text chat.
Remove me from this chat, please.
He left the group chat. Left the group text. That is hilarious right there. Okay, so.
And apparently, after when that report came out, he tweeted about slow news day in the laughing emoji.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yes.
So at least he's keeping up with the news, though, I guess, about himself.
Yeah, he's still got that on
the
alert.
He's probably right about the slow news day thing. I mean, we didn't bring it up, but people have, I mean, that dead horse, I mean, beating that dead horse over and over again, Ben Simmons.
Another person that doesn't seem to be engaged with basketball.
Well, just doesn't want to embrace, he wants to play basketball on his terms. And all the other things that come with that, the teamwork, battling through injury, all
the
those.
The practice. We're talking about practice.
Those are things he's like, nah, I don't know if I'm into that. So, no, you're right. Both Kyrie and Ben Simmons. Sorry. You know what? That brings the show down because those are bad teammates. Can we hear from a really good teammate?
We do. I just want to say one thing for Booker.
Go ahead.
I think they need to learn one word, and every single player, every single staff member from the janitor to Joe Tsai. The word is accountability. You need to hold yourselves accountable because not one person on that team is accountable for anything that happens there.
I like
Very
that.
Fair.
Constantly.
Yeah.
Well, if they did that, well, if Kyrie wasn't so crazy, we'd be champions.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if Durant wasn't hurt, well, if they – shut up. Hold yourself accountable first. If your first report back is not, well, I tried, I'm trying to do this, I'm working on this, I'm working on that, I don't care what you have to say. Anything you blame anybody else in Brooklyn now, don't care. Take some accountability because that franchise has too much talent to be as bad and as much of a joke as they
are. Great point.
Somebody just said, they just hit us right here. They said, why don't they go play for the Kings or something?
Then nobody would know who they
exactly.
were. Go away.
Obscurity.
The Siberia of the NBA. All right, let's hear from Jamal Williams. It's Jamal Williams, right? Is it him?
Yep.
He is a member of the Detroit Lions. This is from Hard Knocks, since we're giving a lot of love to these bad teammates, Kyrie Irving and Ben Simmons. Listen to the passion of Jamal Williams. I guarantee you, you'll get hyped. This is pre-practice speech for the Detroit Lions.
Jamal Williams,
bring it up. I'm gonna let y'all know, man, today is the minimum of effort. Do not give up. Do not feel like you're tired. Were you tired? Think of last year and think of that f-ing record. Every time I get tired or I think I can't go no more, I think of that f-ing record. Last year wasn't it. That ain't us. We can make it. Have some heart. I get emotional about this. I'm about to cry because I care about y'all. Do your best. Let's go. Lions on three. 1, 2, 3.
Lions.
Oh, man. Every time I get tired, I think about that epic record. That could have been Rojo. That's Roshan Johnson right there. And at the workout, at practices. Every time I think about Kansas, you know what? I want to go harder, man. I want to work harder. Every time I think about losing to Kansas.
My man was not happy.
I love that.
My man was not happy.
I'm about to cry. Hey, you know what? I'm pumped up, though. He got me excited.
Yeah, no doubt.
He brought a smile to my face.
No doubt.
Need more teammates like Jamal Williams. We'll come back. We'll get into Cowboys, News, Notes, and Nuggets, and the all-name team in college football. Have some fun there and try not to get fired. All that and more right here on Ball Don't Lie, 104.9 The Horn.